Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of The Vegas Therapist. I am your host, Ryan Winder. And remember, what's happening in Vegas is not staying in Vegas, as I bring you helpful tips in all sorts of topic areas with a Vegas twist, of course. So let's get the show started. Welcome everybody. It's good to have you back in for another episode of The Vegas Therapist. I'm your host, Ryan Winder, licensed marriage and family therapist, practicing now for 20 plus years in the field and enjoying every minute of it. Couple things. One is, in full disclosure, this is my third attempt at recording this podcast. Done it twice already. Didn't really like the energy or the way I felt. Felt like I was more depressed when I was giving it, or just wasn't, I don't know, just didn't have what I was hoping it would have. I feel like the topic is really important, but yeah, I don't know, just dragging, and didn't feel like it was what I wanted to put out there. So here I am, third time. Hopefully third time's a charm. I can deliver what I want. I've actually had a couple experiences with the topic since the last attempt that I hope will also be valuable, that I can provide some added content to the topic at hand. So with that said, before I kind of get to things, again, just want to appreciate it. Want to say thank you to everybody for supporting the podcast. You know, I said at the start of the year that I would probably approach the podcast differently and just try to put out episodes whenever it kind of felt right, or I had something that I wanted to put out there. And so now is one of those times where I do feel like this is an important topic and something that we all can benefit from. I also do want to try to get back to having some guests on, so you're not just hearing from me. But again, just the pursuit of that sometimes is just like, you know, trying to find time for that. But I got a couple people in mind that I want to have on. Just got to make the connections, and or I have the connections. I just got to reach out and get those things established so that we can kind of get back on track with that. But anyway, with that said, today the topic at hand is something that's important, something that's of value, because it is ultimately the most powerful human need that we have, and that is the need to be seen, heard, and loved. And this is a topic that you see in a lot of different literature, and like I said, it's according to research or literature, whatever it is, maybe not research, it is the most powerful human need. We want to know that we matter. We want to know that we're important. And I guess the idea of this session, or the idea of this topic, kind of came to me in a session early on in the week. So that's where I've been kind of trying to put this out there and find a way to present it to everybody. Because I just felt like, yeah, as we talked about it in that session, it's a really important thing. And you know, and I think, like I said before, it's something that we all crave, we all yearn for. Each of us want to have some level of basic respect and understanding in our lives. And the other part about it is when that's not given, when we're not seen and heard, or when we don't feel seen and heard or loved, there are consequences to that within our own selves. Things such as more self-doubt, insecurity, low self-esteem, depression, anxiety, and even anger. And I think that can even just be the tip of the iceberg with some of those things. But it's definitely painful to not be seen and heard. You know, I think when we look at things, and this is kind of maybe more of a simplified version of it, but when we're not heard, we may feel dismissed. When we're not seen, we feel diminished. And when we're not loved, we tend to feel not good enough. And like I said, we don't matter. So all of those things are impactful things. When you feel any of those things in your life, it's going to have an impact. And if it's consistent enough, it's going to have a real impact and real consequences as far as, like, you know, how we see ourselves. And so, again, these experiences make it hard for us to trust our inclinations or even to follow our intuitive needs. And when I kind of thought about that, I just, like, that really spoke to me, or that was really something that I thought is important to understand, is that, you know, the more that we feel not seen, not heard, we're going to really question our overall intuition and our inclinations towards doing certain things or feeling certain things, because again, The reason for that is that when we do express something or when we do try to be seen or heard and it's not validated, that starts to mess with us. So lack of validation for things, lack of validation for what needs are important to us, or not getting any kind of acknowledgement for those things in our lives or that we see as important, really does start to mess with us and, you know, creates problems. The result of, again, those experiences of being invalidated or not seen is that we then kind of start to create this story, or the story of being unseen or not heard or loved becomes a part of our core beliefs. We tend to then tell ourselves stories that reinforce those beliefs in order to protect ourselves. Now, before I get into the protecting ourselves, is like that. So the idea of like us conveying stories to ourselves that kind of reinforce that belief, it's just kind of like how that filter works now. It's like, okay, so I'm not important. So when I'm in situations, I tend to see that first, how I'm not being seen or how I'm not important. And the reason it's a self-protection thing and a self-preservation thing is that why that becomes our primary goal is because we don't want to hurt anymore. We don't want to feel that way. And so if we just kind of already assume the worst or assume that in our lives, then, you know, that's going to be in some sense better for us. At least that's what we tell ourselves, which is another kind of form of the self-betrayal that goes along with that, is that we convince ourselves that seeing the world this way or seeing ourselves in this manner, you know, protects us, when really it just kind of hurts us more, because we're not, you know, maybe being the person that we could be or sharing the things that we could share because we're just, you know, trying to self-protect. Okay, so that's that part of it. The other reason I wanted to do this podcast and discuss this topic is that if we are carrying that wound of not being seen or heard or loved from our childhood, we also want to try to understand what that may look like for us now. You know, like, you know, I've had people that we've talked about different wounds that they carry. Maybe it's like they're, you know, as a result of not being seen and heard, they feel like they're the ones that are maybe like kind of like this idea or core belief that their tendency might be like, oh, I'm the one that's picked last, or I'm the one that's, you know, not good enough in our family, or I'm the one that's, you know, whatever it is. And so that childhood wound stays with us and it turns into different things. And I think one thing that when we look at these different wounds, it makes me think about this book, Reinventing Your Life by Jeff Young. And one of the things that he talks about is that anytime we experience some kind of pain or some kind of wound in life, we will kind of respond to it in three different ways. Now, again, this is just his theory. This is kind of what he talks about, but I think there's some value in kind of understanding the three different responses. The first one is that we will just simply surrender to whatever the wound tells us. So whatever that core belief is, if we feel like we don't matter, or we're not good enough, we just simply surrender to that, and that's how we organize our life. So if you think about that, if you have something like that and you've kind of surrendered to that belief, well, then maybe your life definitely doesn't look the way you'd like it to look. Like maybe, you know, instead of trying to be successful, you underachieve. And why do you underachieve? Well, because I don't feel like I matter, I'm not good enough. And so I just kind of surrender to that belief, and that's how I organize my life. The second way we respond to things is by escape. So whatever that may look like to you, whether it's drugs, alcohol, sex, whatever, or we escape, I mean, video games would be another thing, but we're just trying to avoid or not even think about that feeling or kind of face it in any kind of way. And then the third thing is that we'll enter into like something which is more of like a counterattack kind of approach, where we just try to do the complete opposite. So if we don't feel good enough, we try to like really overcompensate by trying to make ourselves feel good enough in some way. Now that some way can look different for a variety of different people. It's kind of whatever sort of works for us to try to feel good. So some of the things that I thought of with that is that, you know, some people may take on the caretaker role as a way to feel good. So basically it's like whatever I can do for others, how I can meet their needs. And by meeting their needs, that's the way that I feel loved or seen or heard. there's overachiever part. So that's another kind of counterattack compensation where it's like, okay, success now becomes the way that I feel seen, heard, and loved. But again, in a, maybe in an extreme way of overachievement, people can become rescuers or protectors. Like, hey, kind of like that's a similar to like a little bit of the caretaker role. People can also become extreme pleasers. Like, okay, if I make everybody else happy, then I'll be loved or I'll be seen or I'll be heard. And another one I thought of that I don't think it's talked about that much, and maybe because it's a little bit of a treacherous one, and I'll explain why, but it's also the sick person. And I think a lot of times people try to be seen and heard by simply being sick all the time, or at least sick the majority of the time, where, you know, something is wrong with them, and so then people will pay attention to them or give them, you know, some kind of love, or like I said, they'll be seen. The challenge with that one is that it can be very pathological in nature, but as even as a therapist, it's hard if you start to feel like you're seeing that at some level. It's like, it's really a challenge to call that out, because basically it's like, are you telling somebody they're lying? Are they not really sick? Are they not really what they say they are? And so it can kind of be tricky from that standpoint as far as like how you approach that. But just putting it out there, it's definitely, I think, a way that people try to be seen and heard is by being sick. And again, there's some empathy for that, like that's what they feel like they got to resort to in order to have that need met. So there is empathy in that way. But like I said, it's kind of a challenging one to I guess, confront, if that's the right word. So anyway, this whole dynamic of being seen, heard, loved, it's this basic need that we have, or like most powerful need that we have, is to feel that in our lives. And so, you know, as we're thinking about some of the things I've shared and kind of trying to maybe recognize these roles or ways that it may kind of come out, I guess the first part of that, or the reason I kind of mentioned some of those things, is that maybe to help us see how we feel, how we feel, or maybe how we might have created a safe way to be seen and heard. Like in the book, I didn't mention this one, but I think it's a kind of interesting one to mention. Is like, they even talked about like the funny guy, the class, whether that's class clown or the funny guy or whatever. But that's another way that people resort to try to be seen and heard. And again, that can be a good thing, or a funny thing, quote unquote. You know, is when you're around those kind of people, like you feel good because they're funny, they're whatever. But it's almost like they feel like if they can't be funny, that's the other side of it. If they can't be funny, then they're not going to be seen or heard or loved in some kind of way. So it kind of makes it, kind of feels like it forces them into that role all the time, rather than, hey, maybe times I don't have to be funny, or I could be more serious, or I could be more, you know, intentional about certain things. But the fear is that if I give that up, then I won't be loved or seen or heard or any of those things. So doing these behaviors obviously then doesn't really heal the wound. It's just protecting it, right? And we're just trying to not have more of that, you know, hurt come to us. So it again, it's a coping strategy. It's a coping for that. So then maybe we're thinking now, okay, so if we have this wound of not being seen or heard in our lives, and I think we all do at some level, you know, obviously it's like, now how do we maybe heal that? How do we go about dealing with that? And obviously the first thing is like, you know, I think knowing is half the battle. So we have to be able to acknowledge the wound and recognize that that's there in us. And then, you know, after we're able to acknowledge it and recognize that, hey, maybe part of my people pleasing, or part of my funny guy, or part of my overachieving is because I haven't felt seen or heard in some way in my life. Once we acknowledge that, then I think sometimes it's also important for us to have empathy for ourselves, to maybe understand, okay, maybe I did do this to help protect myself. So it's okay to have some kind of empathy. I was listening to the Theo Von podcast the other day, and Dax Shepard was his guest. And I will say, honestly, I was hoping for a little bit more meat in there. I kind of thought it'd be a good combination of those two, but it was a little bit of a different podcast than what I was hoping for. But there was one thing that I really kind of hit me was Dax Shepard was talking about, you know, growing up and growing up poor and all these different things. And then he was saying like how, you know, he was in this situation where his daughter, I think 7 or 8 years old, had a nightmare, and she came to him and was telling about the nightmare and how the nightmare was about her, you know, mommy and daddy getting divorced and what would happen if they got divorced and all these bad things and stuff. And so he was just kind of talking her through it as if, okay, well, even if that did happen, this is what would happen. I would, you know, I'd still be your dad. In fact, I would, you know, buy the house next to your mom so I could be there beside you all the time. And, you know, we'd still have this relationship. And so he's just trying to help her feel secure in this kind of insecure type thing or this bad dream that she had. But as he was doing that, he was kind of looking at her and just thinking about this interaction he was having. And he was recognizing that, you know, him as a 7 or 8 year old was a completely different person. He'd already gone through, he was like on his third stepdad. He'd been sexually abused by that age, you know, and all these different things. And it was just like this reflection part about, man, like, this is crazy that here's my daughter, sweet and innocent, you know, like worrying about divorce with her parents. And at that point in my life, I'd already been through three of those or three different stepdads, been abused, all these different things. So maybe I need to have some empathy for myself for some of the things that either I've lacked or not done or struggled with or whatever. It's like I didn't necessarily have the same, obviously, security that my daughter has, the same comfort, the same guidance. And so it was just a lesson in kind of being empathetic to ourselves and recognizing that those wounds that we've experienced, they have had an impact and they are painful, and it's okay if they've kind of like derailed us a little bit, but, you know, but hey, but we can also fix those and heal those wounds and be better for it. So having empathy is another part. Long way to go into that. But anyway, then I think another part is then we have to also then be willing to dig into the fear. Because a lot of this is based around fear. We have this fear that if we put ourselves out there or if we allow ourselves to be vulnerable and real in some kind of way, we're going to experience the same kind of thing. And so we have to dig into the fear that keeps us stuck in that cycle of behavior, or at least the behavior that is we've kind of used to cope with that keeps us, you know, in that place of like only doing things like the caretaking, where we're only going to caretake because that's the way that we know that we'll feel loved, versus like maybe doing something different or not caretaking as much or setting boundaries in our caretaking. There's fear in that because we're worried that if we don't do that all the time, again, we're not going to be seen, heard, or loved. And so, you know, digging into that fear, acknowledging the fears there, and being able to kind of, you know, move towards confronting that fear in a way where we move away from those behaviors and see that that's possible and see that we can do that. Another point of healing is this notion of a notion of self-validation, or where some people, like, I guess in some ways it can also be like a little bit of reparenting ourselves, but validating or acknowledging the things that, you know, that we felt and gone through, and being able to kind of even validate ourselves through whether it's like, hey, you're good enough, but also too validating the aspect of like, hey, I've experienced some kind of pain or hurt here and that's okay. And one thing, this was kind of interesting, this is why I'm kind of glad I'm doing this for the third time, was like on Tuesday I had this little kind of visceral experience where I'd been thinking about the topic, you know, being seen and heard and how that would be for me, like maybe even as myself, if I was able to better stand up for myself at different points in my life, right? And so I had this experience that I'm going to go back to. But what was interesting was today, I do like a supervision for interns who are on their way to being licensed therapists. And I'm just going to give a shout out to them because they're an amazing group, great group of therapists, and a lot of good insight, a lot of good quality therapy that they are giving to people. And just, it's really great to be with them. But we were talking about this particular case and this therapist who was using IFS therapy, was internal family systems therapy. And there's a lot of like, it's got some similarities to EMDR, but it's also got its own thing. And in that therapy, there's kind of two things that are really important. Well, there's a bunch of things that are important, but in this case, one of the important things was that you try to be there as a therapist to be a witness for the person's pain, right? And so you want to help them to feel like, which is, again, allowing them to be seen, heard, loved, whatever it is. So you're witnessing that for them. So you try to get them into the place where they're willing to kind of, you know, just acknowledge the pain that they felt in a certain situation, right? So that's the first thing. And then the second thing is that you can actually take them back to a specific scene or a place where they felt like they weren't seen. In this case, we'll use that example, weren't seen, weren't heard, weren't loved. And you talk them through that in a way to where you just allow them to say, okay, whatever you want to say, whatever you want to do, whatever you, however you want to reenact this scene so that you feel the way that you want to feel, or that you're able to kind of almost like rewrite the scene so that you feel validated within yourself, right? So I think that's something that we can do with these situations too for ourselves, is being able to do that. And going back to my experience, what was interesting was that I was doing this without even knowing like it was a technique until even though I know a little bit about IFS and stuff and I use it a little bit in my practice, this particular exercise I didn't really know was there. But what was interesting was I was kind of practicing it on myself without even knowing it. So as I was thinking about different times where I didn't feel seen or heard or loved, I went to this moment in my life, and it was almost like I went to my 10th grade self. And when I was in 10th grade, I tried out for the basketball team in high school, and I grew up in a small town. And I'm not going to try to make excuses or whatever, but or sound whiny, I guess. But like, I grew up in a small town. You didn't always make teams because of how good you were. Sometimes it was who you knew and who you were in the community. And that's just the reality. Like, whoever's growing up in a small town know that sometimes that's just how small towns work, right? It's not always the best players. It's like who you are, who your dad is, and that's just what it is, you know? Again, I don't want to sound cocky in saying this either, but I had people telling me, you're going to make the team, you great player, whatever, like you'll be fine. And so when I got cut, there was a little bit of a shock because I wasn't really expecting that and didn't really think that would be happening. As I saw the list of the players who made the team, I was like going through them like, okay, I'm better than him, outperformed him in the tryouts. And so it was a little disheartening, and obviously it was a little bit difficult. But when I was kind of like going over that scene in my mind the other day, I was like, okay, what if my 10th grade self, what if he'd have felt empowered enough that when he walked in that room with those coaches and they told him and they were trying to explain to him why he didn't make the team, that he would have been able to say to them back, or had a strong enough voice to be able to say, hey, I don't know what the hell you guys were watching, but were you guys even paying attention during those tryouts? Were you guys even like watching those games I was playing? And were you even like considering how much I was outplaying these other people? Or was your mind already made up? Because it feels like your mind was already made up, because this person, I know I outplayed him. I played against him. I know I outscored him. I know I did all these different things. So obviously you were either not watching or you already had your mind made up, because there's just no way that my talent level or my abilities for this team are not there. I just wondered like what that would have felt like. And it was kind of like, as you're talking about it, you kind of feel this sense of like validation with yourself. Like, yeah, like that would have been nice for my 10th grade self to be able to say those things and express that in a way that would have made him feel validated. And even if it wouldn't have changed the outcome, I would have still been able to stand up for myself. Now, I know most 10th grade kids don't, you know, aren't able to tap into that or say those things or stand up to teachers or coaches or whatever in that way. But as I reworked through that scene, it felt good to be able to rework through it and be able to say those things or envision myself saying that. And so that was an opportunity for me to be seen and heard in that scene as I reworked through it, and it felt good. And I think that that's another technique that we can utilize, that we can tap into, that, you know, can be a value for us, right? So reworking the scene, putting ourselves in that scene and finding ways to just express ourselves in those moments is therapeutic. I think the other thing, and sometimes I don't really talk about this as much, the other great thing to do as far as this healing process is that go to therapy. You know, like sometimes we need a trusted, non-biased person that can be in those rooms with us to help us to feel that sense of validation. Like we have to start to maybe in a place where, you know, it's not with maybe, you know, a parent or somebody who's hurt us or whatever. It's like we have to get that confidence maybe in the therapy room to be able to share more of ourselves, to express ourselves, to see that our feelings are, they are valid, that they are accurate, or to get them acknowledged. And so if you've been afraid to go to therapy, you know, make that a habit. Hey, I'm taking clients or whatever, you know, I mean, if I am somewhat taking clients. But I think that that's an important thing, you know, is that we do the work for ourselves and we find a trusted person that we can do that with and not be embarrassed about that. It's okay. Like if that's a place that we need to start so that we feel seen and heard. And even if we're paying the person to see and hear us, there's still value in that. There's still importance that we get those feelings out and we feel acknowledged by them. So I think therapy is a good way because again, we get that feedback and that validation for those needs and stuff. So those are some of the things I think we can do as a way of trying to heal that wound of being seen, heard, and loved in our lives. And I'm sure there's other things that I missed that are just as important. But those are some things to start with. And anyway, I just think this is such an important topic because if you look in the world and you look at different things and even see some of the behaviors that I think are going on, a lot of it, especially in the social media world, I think it's exemplified this need to feel seen and heard. Like everybody's looking for a piece of that. Everybody's looking for a way to stand out, a way to get themselves noticed, a way to get themselves seen. And I think it's just like we've overshot that in a way to where it's like the basic level of that maybe starts at home, starts with our families, starts with our, you know, our kids, whatever it is, that we have to find ways to allow them to feel seen and heard in our homes. Otherwise, if they don't, they're going to start doing that outwardly or whatever in whatever situation, and who knows what that can turn into. You know, again, not criticizing anybody in terms of like what they may be doing to try to be seen and heard, but I think it's easy to step back and see that some behaviors and some ways of doing that have become problematic because just at such a level that we want so much of that. And again, some people want it at a grand level. You know, they want to have 10,000 followers or they want to, you know, do something that's going to shock the world. So they have that moment of being seen and heard. And like I said, that's caused its own issues in many ways. But even something as simple in order to be seen and heard, I know like my daughter would probably kill me for this, but you know, like even for her, she's our youngest. She's the baby. She's the only kid at home right now. And I think sometimes maybe she feels neglected or not seen or heard or doesn't have the same things that maybe her brothers had or whatever it is, or when all three of them were home. So like even like this last Easter, it was like she was like, you know, kind of saying like, oh, I still want an Easter basket. You guys don't ever do anything for Easter or whatever. You know, we used to hunt eggs and this and that. And even though she's 17, but even just thinking about that, something as simple as that, it's like, okay, she's asking for something. She wants to feel like a kid. She wants to feel like we still see her, that she, you know, she's still important. So what did we do? Well, we got her an Easter basket. We set up an Easter egg hunt. We, you know, did some things for her so that she felt seen and heard. It can be as simple as that. You know, like what are our kids asking for? What are they needing to feel that in their lives? And then being able to, you know, not obviously dismiss that, but find ways to make sure that they know that they're seen and heard. So again, that was a little bit of the soapbox. I wasn't necessarily anticipating that. But like I said, that's why I think third times was a charm to be able to kind of get this out so you could see the whole concept, so you could see the whole reason why I'm trying to bring this to our attention, because I think there's a lot of issues out there with this dynamic in society. And like I said, I think social media, you know, it has made it even worse, you know, because people are trying to fight for their place to be seen and heard. And like I said, maybe it's something we need to do more of just in the little moments in our homes. Like I said, with our kids, with our friends, with our families, anybody that, you know, is meaningful to us, maybe just try to do that do a little bit more of that. So anyway, hope this has been okay. glad I re-recorded it for the third time. And this is the Vegas Therapist signing off. Until next time.